Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland, and I am your hostess for this evening. And we are brought to you, as always, through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com, a great group of people who believe in this nation and what its founders based it upon. I'm hoping that all of you tonight are going to be safe from bad weather. We've got another storm system coming here in Virginia tomorrow afternoon, and fortunately, the school where I work is going to be dismissing early because it's exam time. So I'm pretty sure most of our kids will be able to get home safely before the snow comes. And in Virginia, believe me, 1 inch of snow paralyzes everything. We're just not used to it. For those of you who live in the north and the northeast, I know that you guys can drive on 6 inches and not even notice it's any different from bare roads. But Virginians don't usually have snow tires, and the Virginia Department of Transportation deals with the interstates and the major arteries and cities before they get to the rural communities like the one in which I live. Tonight our topic is bits and pieces of failure. I have, in the past week or so, been inundated with more and more examples of why our public schools have fallen from among the top among developed nations to one step from the bottom. They range from children being given the answers to exam questions, to study for the exam and then half the class failing it, to the insidious Common Core that states have been pretty much blackmailed into accepting without having any idea what it consists of in order to get federal funding for their education departments. I've watched the special education departments of our schools rule the place, where children who are incapable of self-control happily disrupt classes and get by with it because they are being told through action as well as words that they can't help it and they are not required to control themselves because they have a disability. I have watched kids in collaborative classes who are perfectly capable of doing the work slack off because they're in the same class with people who get everything given to them before they take a test and have one-on-one instruction in the middle of class while the teacher is attempting to instruct 20-some-odd kids. I have seen federal interference create situations where schoolboy pranks of jerking down somebody's gym shorts become sexual abuse and frighten a 13-year-old into thinking he's going to be wearing a monitor and under house arrest and listed as a sex offender for the rest of his life. Because we are being dominated by the progressive mindset in education that expects and demands of our teachers and schools equal outcomes instead of equal opportunities. This nation was not founded on the idea that all human beings are alike. It was founded on the idea that all human beings deserve a chance to succeed based on their efforts, their abilities, and their desire. We are telling a generation of children that effort is not required for them to be successful, and that if they are, quote-unquote, disabled, the world will bow and do whatever is necessary to make them feel good about themselves and be happy. I seem to remember that the Declaration of Independence doesn't list among our inalienable rights the guarantee to achieving happiness. As I recall, it says that we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, and that among these are the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Not the attainment, not the guarantee, but merely the chance to chase it. And if you're lucky and you work hard, you might just catch it. Our kids are being told that they are guaranteed happiness, that everyone is going to adjust their behavior to accommodate our kids. Well, when I was brought up, I was taught that I had to adjust my behavior to accommodate the mores and ethics and values of the society in which I lived. And that picking up a desk and throwing it in the middle of class because I'm frustrated or angry at what someone said or I don't like math was not acceptable behavior. And what it got me was being kicked out of school. The school systems that you send your children to, ladies and gentlemen, are cheating them of real education. They are predigesting everything so that all a child has to do is fill in a blank on a pre-written set of notes on a material in a textbook that they don't even bother to read. They are being taught that in order to answer the questions about a story or an article or a chapter in the history book, all they have to do is look for a keyword and copy down whatever sentence contains it to answer the question correctly. Or find the sentence in their notes that has a blank space, repeat it in their textbook, fill in the word that's missing in the blank space, and blithely go on talking about who's dating who and what game they're going to play when they get home. A friend of mine who's in the chat room, Miss Linda Sills, who is our hostess for Right from the Left Coast every Wednesday, sent me a link to an article, an op-ed piece by Michelle Malkin, one of the stars of the conservative movement, who will not sit down and shut up, God bless you, Michelle, regarding the Common Core standards that our federal government is imposing on our public schools. Michelle's op-ed piece, I knew some of the information in it before I read it. I knew that the Common Core educational curriculum that the federal government has created through the back door of a study group affiliated with the Department of Education to avoid violating the strictures on that department that say they cannot in any way promote, require, or influence curricula for any school in any state, was being developed to further our advancement in the fields of math and science because we are lagging behind 99% of the countries on Earth, with the possible exception of Bangladesh and Somalia. None of these Common Core curricular specifics were available for states to look at. The states were required, in order to get the funding they needed to provide public education, if they had not established a curriculum that the federal government liked, they were required to agree to use the federal Common Core curriculum in order to receive their funding from the federal government, with no advance information on exactly what standards these Common Core curricula would put in place. Well, in Michelle's article, she talks about what those standards really are going to be. And I am going to quote from the article. I'm going to read you the section that is the most frightening to me. From Michelle Malkin. There's no better illustration of Common Core's duplicitous talk of higher standards than to start with its math reforms. While Common Core promoters assert their standards are, quote, internationally benchmarked, unquote, independent members of the expert panel in charge of validating the standards refute the claim. Panel member Dr. Sandra Stotsky of the University of Arkansas reported, quote, no material was ever provided to the validation committee or to the public on the specific college readiness expectations of other leading nations in mathematics, unquote, or other subjects. All right. Now, how are we going to match the expectations of other countries if we have no clue what they are? Michelle continues. In fact, Stanford University professor James Milgram, the only mathematician on the validation panel, concluded that the Common Core math scheme would place American students 2 years behind their peers in other high-achieving countries. In protest, Milgram refused to sign off on the standards. He is not alone. Still quoting Michelle's op-ed piece, Professor Jonathan Goodman of New York University found that the Common Core math standards imposed, quote, significantly lower expectations with respect to algebra and geometry than the published standards of other countries, unquote. Under Common Core, as the American Principles Project and Pioneer Institute point out, Algebra 1 instruction is pushed to ninth grade instead of eighth grade, as commonly taught. Division is postponed from fifth to sixth grade instead of prime factorization, common denominators, conversions of fractions and decimals, and algebraic manipulation are de-emphasized or eschewed. Traditional Euclidean geometry is replaced with an experimental approach that had not been previously pilot tested in the U.S. There's more in Michelle's article, and I can give you the website where you can find it. It is located, I'll see if I can find it. And if I can't, you can visit our website, and I'm sure Linda will put a link on it for you. You can also email Michelle at malkinblog@gmail.com and probably find it there. But basically, what that just says, to put it into common everyday language, is that our children are going to be told that they don't need to know how to work with fractions. They don't need to know how to find common denominators and understand what multiples and products are, or factors. They do not need to know how to convert fractions to decimals. They are not going to be required to learn how to divide whole numbers until they are in sixth grade. And they are not going to be taught anything about how to work with an equation and what it means. So they are going to be basically dumped into Algebra 1 in ninth grade with no understanding of basic mathematical relationships in fractions, decimals, common denominators, multiples, and factors, and be expected to catch on to this miraculously when given an algebraic problem that contains a variable in fraction form. These people, ladies and gentlemen, are crazy. I have been involved in education for over 40 years now. I know what it takes to understand algebraic principles. You have to know how to do the problems with real, discernible, countable numbers and understand their relationships before you can solve an algebraic equation that puts an X or a Y in there. I have children taking algebra, Algebra 1, in eighth grade, who are failing it because they never learned how to do a common garden variety fraction. If you do not understand that in order to add or subtract fractions, you must change them by multiplication to a common denominator form so that you can then add and subtract numerators and have the same denominator in your answering fraction, they are not going to be able to understand how to do this when they are given x plus 2 over 3 equals 17. We are letting our federal government and the progressive educational theorists turn our kids into stupid idiots who cannot do basic math because they are being taught that there are calculators and somebody who will give them answers to have before they take the test. This is just the beginning, ladies and gentlemen, with Common Core. These are only what they've released so far in the math area. What are they going to do to science? Are they going to eliminate the periodic table because it has too many numbers in it? Are they going to say, oh no, you don't need to know the atomic number because we'll tell you what the mass is and we'll tell you how many neutrons and electrons there are and we'll tell you the answer so that you can pass the test on it and graduate from high school with supposedly the knowledge of a high school graduate and then you can go out and try to get a job and wind up unemployed because you can't think, let alone do garden variety high school math. My friend Linda says they'll sell them junk science with the Al Gore style of global warming, and she's exactly correct. They're already doing it. Progressives, liberals, Marxists, socialists, whatever label you want to put on them, suffer from the mental disorder called liberal thinking. Liberal does not mean what it used to mean. Liberal used to mean those who were in favor of the idea that the ordinary worker should share in the wealth of the business owners who employed them, and that the voice of the common man should be listened to as well as the voice of the intellectual and economic elite. That used to be liberal. It used to be liberal to think like a libertarian, to follow Jefferson's dictum that if it doesn't break my leg or pick my pocket, I don't care what you do in the privacy of your own home. No, liberal now, because of the takeover of the Democratic Party by the Marxist progressive elements in it, means insane. And I'm sorry if that sounds harsh or cruel or unkind. But the definition of insanity, ladies and gentlemen, is doing the same thing in the same way over and over again and expecting a different result every time. And that is what progressives are doing. They are creating the same climate that gave us Adolf Hitler and Mao Zedong and Che Guevara and Fidel Castro and every other dictator and power-mad megalomaniac that has ever held sway over his or her society for however long until somebody deposed them. Every single one of the infamous monsters who have subjugated their people in order to get more power for themselves winds up the same way. Inevitably, their regime collapses, their power disappears along with their life. Because the ideas that they build their power on are impossible to achieve with living human beings. No matter how kind and generous and compassionate you are to those who are less fortunate than you, in whatever way, economic, intellectual, physical, whatever, you cannot guarantee equal outcomes to any group of people. You can't guarantee equal outcomes for any pair of people. Some people are going to be incapable of doing some things. Some people are going to be phenomenally capable at doing some things. And most of us fall somewhere in the middle. There will always be someone who is better at something than you. And there will always be someone who is not as good at it as you are. Instead of trying to feed the lie that everybody does everything equally well, which is what progressives are doing with our educational system, what we need to be doing is telling the truth to our kids. We need to be smart enough and compassionate enough to recognize that opportunity is what this nation was built on, not guaranteed success. And we need to stop assuming that all we have to do is pass a law or a regulation or create a new committee or study group or investigative body or agency, and we will automatically redesign humanity into perfect specimens that can become gods. I substituted for a paraprofessional aide in two science classes yesterday. They were collaborative classes, classes in which some students had great difficulties with learning and were under the protection and tutelage of the special education department, and other students who were capable of learning and were average or above average in their ability to master academic skills. The grade point average for the first semester for both classes was below 78%. Both classes, all students in both classes, were told to pull out their tests from the semester, and then they were given a list of questions from those tests that would appear on their exam. All of them. The students who were special education didn't even have to write down the list. It was printed for them. So both of these classes, and I don't know about the other classes in that particular science thing, whether they got the same thing or not, but I know the two that I substituted in did. In effect, they were given the test to study before they took it. Now, what in the name of heaven is the purpose of the test? Why do we bother to test them? What does it show us? Anything? Does it tell us anything about what they've learned? Does it tell us anything about the effectiveness of the teacher? Does it tell us anything about whether or not they're going to be ready to go on to the next semester's work? I think you can answer that question, ladies and gentlemen. It doesn't tell us anything about any of those questions. All it tells us is, did the child sit down with mommy and daddy at home or his special ed teacher at school and memorize the answer to all the tests? And I will bet you anything you want to name that on the exam, the grade point average of those two classes will remain exactly where it has been for the entire semester. Because they are being told that they do not have to try to understand the material taught them in science. All they have to do is study the test and then spit it back out again when they're given it on exam day. Because the state of Virginia is now, along with many other states, answering the criticisms of our citizens about what we are doing with public education by using class averages and test grades to determine the quality and competence of the teacher. Because we have to be a data-driven educational system. If we don't have numbers, then we cannot evaluate. Because the only way we can tell whether children are learning what they're supposed to learn is by their test grades. And my friend Linda said, it sounds like you all, meaning all of us teachers, are being set up for failure. And she's right. We are. Because it is being demanded of the teaching profession that they guarantee equal outcomes for all the children in their classes. That everybody should get a B. And it's never going to happen. It is never going to happen, ladies and gentlemen, because not everybody is a B student. Not everybody learns at the same rate or in the same quantity or with the same ease. And no matter how many regulations and evaluations and tests and psychological profiles and teacher professional development classes and happy little new ways to make a stupid child smart by foldables and illustrations and technology, you can't fix stupid. Ignorance can be cured. Stupidity cannot. The progressive educational theorists who come up with these asinine methodologies actually went to school when they were expected to learn something. Most of them are PhDs. Even in today's god-awful educational climate, it takes some time and some brains to get a PhD. Most of these people are maybe 15, 20 years younger than I am. To reach the eminence in their profession that allows them to impose their theories on the entire country, they have to have garnered age, experience, connections, etc. Published things, you know, get accolades from their academic colleagues. So unless they have a ghostwriter that lives in their closet at home, they have to have done something academically. And that takes time. The young whiz kids aren't teaching college. They're inventing Facebook or 3D printers or the Apple computer. So these are people who actually went through public schools when public schools required that you learn something in order to graduate. And their compassionate hearts and their incredible brilliance have led them to make the fundamental mistake of assuming that everybody else is just like them. Or they have bought into everybody else is incredibly stupid, and they don't really have to know anything, they just have to be taught to accept political correctness and we'll all be fine. They come in two types, and those are the basic types. There are variations on those two. But in general, it boils down, simplistically, to those two thinking patterns. They either see themselves as Plato's philosopher kings, or they see themselves as capable of redesigning all human beings to meet their standards of academic ability and success. By the way that teachers are told they have to teach. Well, the way teachers are told they have to teach is impossible in a public school classroom. Teachers are told that if a child does not learn, it is their fault, that they are somehow not teaching right. I had a student tell me that in a Spanish class because I didn't spend every class singing songs to help them remember the days of the week. in Spanish. I actually wanted them to know what nouns and verbs and adjectives were and to understand how they went together in sentences. So I was a bad teacher because they weren't having any fun. They weren't doing sing-alongs for every class, which makes it easier for me to learn. Yeah, it makes it easier for you to memorize a string of words in another language that you have to sing to yourself in order to say today is Tuesday, but that does not teach you how to speak Spanish or read Spanish or translate English into Spanish or translate Spanish into English. Our kids have been cheated, and they continue to be cheated, ladies and gentlemen, out of the education that you and I pay for. Instead of successful, independent, self-reliant adults, they are being turned into eternal infants who scream and open their mouths and hands when what they want doesn't fall into those mouths and hands without effort. Our educational system is composed of bits and pieces of failure. Policies and programs and red tape and paperwork and evaluations and data-driven analyses and test scores and standards of learning that mean nothing, that reinforce the teacher's ability to get tenure and stay on the job, and deny our kids the chance to actually learn and to become lifelong learners. I've talked to many business people, small business owners and those who work in larger businesses. And the crop of young people who are coming into their human resources offices to apply for jobs are as ill-prepared to enter the workforce as a six-month-old baby would be to take classes in advanced Egyptian hieroglyphs, because they don't have any clue that when you're hired, you're expected to work. And you're not going to get somebody standing beside you and holding your hand until you're ready to reach out and touch the computer yourself. And no, you don't get to spend all your time at the office keeping up with your Facebook friends and purchasing things from Amazon. And deadlines mean that when something is due and you don't have it, you get fired. There is a vast conspiracy going on, ladies and gentlemen. A conspiracy that is set up to destroy this country, not through military force, but through ignorance. The quickest way to destroy a people is to keep them ignorant and afraid, because both those states require them to be dependent on someone other than themselves for their success, their safety, their advancement, their learning, their ability to make wise choices, their discernment, and their ability to judge right and wrong. We can, ladies and gentlemen, stop this. It will take all of us, every single one of us who has a child, a grandchild, a niece, a nephew, a cousin, a neighbor's kid in public school. And it will take those who do not understand that accommodating their kids isn't helping them to wake up and realize that, no, little Johnny, who has difficulty discerning the difference between 3 and 6, is probably not going to get a master's degree. And no matter how many lawsuits and complaints you file, it's still not going to happen. I'll write you a piece of paper that he has one, and it'll be worth just about as much as you're sending little Johnny to college. Little Johnny probably would make a much better bicycle repairman than a master's in biophysics. But God forbid my child shouldn't have a PhD or a master's or a BA, because I won't be proud of him if he's a bicycle mechanic. He won't be rich. Visa bicycle. Well, guess what? He's probably going to be richer than the PhD. Unless the PhD manages to stay in school, okay, and get tenure and teach other little Johnnies who can't read. We have got to wake up, ladies and gentlemen, to reality. And we have got to start making our school boards, our superintendents, our teachers' unions, our parents understand that you cannot have what you want with the current classroom's public school organization. You're not going to get the child who can't keep up to magically keep up by being given answers to tests. So his grades look good, but he doesn't know anything. There is a novel called Starship Troopers that was written by Robert Heinlein in the 50s, I believe. It's an adult science fiction novel, and it was made into a movie, which really was a terrible movie because it didn't follow the book at all. But in the book, in this future society, in order to be a citizen, you have to have served in the armed forces. And Heinlein's storyline basically follows a young man who wants to be a citizen. Not really a whole lot, but he thinks it'd be a cool idea because his best friend wants to do it, or one of his best friends, and a really, really, really pretty girl that he is enamored of wants to do it. So, like most young men who think below the waist, he decides he'll go along and be one too. And it follows his career in the what is called in this future society, the mobile infantry. And in this society, history and moral philosophy is a required course in high school. And it must be taught by a citizen. And the hero of our story, young Johnny, is taught by a retired colonel who has no legs. He lost them in his military career. And in one class, his history teacher is talking about success and what success actually is. And Johnny says something about, well, everybody should be successful. You know, we should make it so everybody can be successful. And the history professor says, okay, well, you were on track, right? And Johnny says, yeah. And the history professor said, yeah, and you came in third in the 100-meter dash, didn't you? And Johnny says, yeah, I know. And he's thinking to himself, why do you have to bring that up? You know, I was really, you know, trying hard, and I just couldn't make it for first place, and I missed only by a tenth of a second. And Johnny says, yeah, I came in third. And the professor picks up a piece of paper and he draws on it the picture of a ribbon, and he colors it in blue, and he rolls over to Johnny's desk, and he puts it down, and he says, okay, here's your first prize. You won first prize in the 100 meter. And Johnny says, no, I didn't. You know I came in third. And the teacher says, yeah, but this says you won first prize. So, obviously, you got a piece of paper that says you won first prize, so you won first prize. And Johnny says, no, I didn't. I was third. You know, you watched. The professor says, well, doesn't this make you feel good? And Johnny says, no, I know I came in third. I didn't earn that. I didn't win. And all of a sudden, the light dawns on our Johnny. I didn't earn it. How can everybody be successful if everybody doesn't earn it? I'm sorry about the phone ringing, ladies and gentlemen. It actually was not my stepdaughter calling me in the middle of the show, which she sometimes does. It was the schools calling me to tell me something I already knew, that they're dismissing early tomorrow. They're very good at informing us of stuff we already know, but that's okay because, you know, we want to keep our kids safe. But anyhow, Johnny's experience with his history and moral philosophy teacher is one that our children are not getting. They're not being taught that you have to put forth effort to win. They're being taught that everybody gets a trophy because that's fair. That's fair. Well, no, it isn't. It's not fair. It's not fair to the guy who does win, who's trained and struggled, or who has a natural talent for running. But nobody cares whether we're fair to him. Fair doesn't mean what it used to when I was in school. Fair used to mean an equal chance. It doesn't now. Fair, in progressive think, means equal outcome. It's not fair that my neighbor down the street makes more money than I do. I should make the same amount of money as he does. Well, my neighbor down the street owns his own business, works 60 hours a week, has grown his business, so it's very financially successful. And I haven't done those things. Because I didn't want to, or didn't have the energy, or didn't have the opportunity, well, or didn't take advantage of an opportunity to create my own business and make it successful and work 60 hours a week. But it's not fair that he made a lot of money and I didn't. So he's supposed to give me some of his, so it's all fair. Well, no, it's not fair. It's not fair to him. He worked for that. He put forth the effort. He broke his back working long hours, staying on top of his business, putting all of his time and his energy and his goods into that business. And he was successful. He won. He got the blue ribbon. I have no right in the name of fairness to take his away from him or have one just like it because I did not do the work. All those special ed kids who are being given the answers to the exam before they take it, and then who get a 90%, is that fair to the kid in the other class that doesn't have special ed students who wasn't given all the questions and gets a 90%? There have been several experiments done by conservatives on college campuses. Students and teachers that apply the fairness doctrine to your grades. And in college, as far as I know, they haven't gone so far as to give everybody who's special education the test first so they can ace it. Because usually if you're special education, you don't manage to stay in college long enough. But anyhow, when they've done it in college classes and they've said, okay, the way we're going to do this is we're going to average all the grades on this test, and everybody gets the average grade. So in a classroom of, say, 20 people, you wind up with an average of 90%, because you had 10 people who scored 95 and 5 people who scored, say, 80, and you had 4 people who scored 75 and 3 people who failed it. And you wind up, because you had a lot of people who did really well, that everybody gets a 90. That's great. That's wonderful. And then the next test comes around, and you do the same thing. And the average grade is a 78, and everybody gets it. And then everybody complains, because the kids that got the 90 on the first test got 90 on this one too, but they weren't allowed to keep it because it wasn't fair to the kids who had failed the first one. And those that got an 80 didn't bother to study because they knew the ones who got 90 would pull their grades up. And then they figured out that, my God, I wound up with less than I had. And all of a sudden, we don't like this fair system anymore. This isn't right. I earned that 85 and I'm stuck with a 78. Yeah, because that's fair. Got to have equal outcomes. Everybody has to get the same thing. No matter how much effort they put in, no matter how much ability they have. And yet we turn around and we deify members of professional sports teams who have an amazing talent and wind up with huge contracts because they are really, really superlative good at what they do on the sports field. And we hold these people up as role models and someone to emulate to our kids. It just doesn't make any sense. None of it makes any sense. As I said earlier, ladies and gentlemen, progressivism is literally insane. Literally insane. Because it is expecting and demanding the impossible. And anyone with a thinking mind knows that what they want and what they're trying to create is impossible with living human beings. It's like saying that someone with no arms and no legs should be able to run a marathon and win it, because that's the only fair thing. Well, I don't care how many artificial appendages you attach. It is extraordinarily unlikely that that individual with no arms and no legs is going to get his appendages attached and immediately run out and win a marathon. And yet that is exactly what our children are being told in our schools. That giving you the answers before you take the test so you can get a good grade on it is educating you. It's not. It's giving you the piece of paper with a blue ribbon drawn on it. It's giving you the piece of candy when you throw a desk because we just want to show we love you. It's promising you that everybody in the world will bend over backwards to give you what they have because you are fill in the blank. And you can put anything in there. Or simply just leave off the blank and say they'll do all of that for you because you are. I am not cruel enough to want to throw our kids out into the wilderness at age 5 and tell them survive or die. And our public education system is not that cruel and was never that cruel. But it didn't promise them something that they weren't being delivered. They didn't tell them that the world was going to be their oyster with no effort on their part. Another aspect of the bits and pieces of failure, which I mentioned at the start of the show, is this incredible, I don't know what to call it, magnification of kids' stupid behaviors into major crimes. Our school, and I'm guessing most of the ones that you're familiar with, are very much involved in the anti-bullying indoctrination in school. That having weekly meetings about how bullying is bad and what they should do about it if they are bullied, if they see somebody being bullied or this, that, or the other, and that if you bully people, they're likely to want to be so badly traumatized that they'll go out and get a gun and kill 30 or 40 people just to get revenge, and you know that you have to include everybody and that you have to step in and tell an adult immediately if you think somebody's being bullied or you're being bullied. Well, yeah, you do. But it's gotten carried to the point that I had a young gentleman pass in and out of my ISS room on a temporary basis this week because he had engaged in a prank along with other members of the sports team that he was with on the bus going to and from a sports meet. That prank was typical of boys, of, you know, pulling down somebody's gym shorts, that kind of thing, or sweatpants. It was a common thing among young men in British prep schools and guys in military schools and so on and so forth, or boys in any gym class. And they call it, British called it D-bagging, which is, you know, it's a stupid, embarrassing thing to do to somebody. But that kind of behavior among the puppies in the male wolf pack has been going on ever since human beings were here. Well, this kid was absolutely convinced that he was going to be under house arrest with a monitor and labeled as a sex offender for the rest of his life because the young man who was the recipient of this stupid, embarrassing prank told his parents, and the parents went to the school, and the resource officer was involved, and the parents can bring charges against the young man who did it because it's considered a sex crime. Okay. How many out there listening remember incidents like that happening in their lives, either seeing or hearing about them or even taking part in them or suffering from them? This is a sex crime? This is sexual abuse? No. This is stupid puppy behavior by young boys being jerks. It's not appropriate, it's not kind, it's not good sportsmanship, it's not even good sense. But a sex crime? Come on, people. You're taking the impact and making it worse than it normally would be. It's not like 13-year-old boys never think about sex at all. They spend 26 hours a day thinking below the waist. You don't need to emphasize it. My friend Linda said that the guys in her high school who may have done something like that, if there was a consequence, it came from the coach and it was at the end of a paddle. Yeah. And that usually stopped the garbage. Now we're going to label a stupid kid doing a stupid thing because other stupid kids were doing it as a sexual abuser? Like the little 5-year-old girl who was questioned by police because she said she was going to shoot her friend with her Hello Kitty bubble gun? Like I said, ladies and gentlemen, It's insanity. Kids are not adults. Ha! Major breakthrough in scientific thought. Kids don't think like adults. Another major breakthrough in scientific thought. Psychologists, are you awake out there? Guess what? Kids aren't adults. Kids don't foresee the consequences of their actions. They are kids. They do stupid stuff to each other. They are young animals. They are not mature thinking adults. And we are doing everything in our power in public school to keep them young, unthinking animals. Or turn them into criminals for being young, unthinking animals. It's impossible. You can't get out of one side of your mouth that they're kids and they need to be protected and they're not responsible for what they do, and then turn around and out of the other side of your mouth, when they do something stupid and kid-like, label them as a sex criminal. Progressivism, as it has permeated our education system, ladies and gentlemen, is the most insidious and evil movement this nation has ever known. Even the rampant progressives of the early 20th century, like Wilson, and the practical progressives of the middle of the 20th century, like FDR, didn't destroy this nation's ability to educate our kids. At least not immediately. But their ideas, with which our modern progressives are so in love, are being implemented, and they will destroy our kids. We can stop this. Those of us who are still educated and who are capable of thinking and who have brought up children or been around children or taught children need to stand up and speak out and call this insanity exactly what it is. We are not going to be able to teach children if we want individualized instruction for every one of them and one-size-fits-all classrooms. You can't have both. And you cannot hold a teacher responsible for a child's unwillingness to put forth effort or inability to remember what he or she hears or sees. You cannot expect of another human being that they are going to be able to fix stupid. They're not. The only thing that they can be expected to do is to try to educate stupid to be able to at least feed itself, figuratively and metaphorically, and not be called upon to teach stupid to become a PhD in molecular biology. We have got to start looking at the world realistically, ladies and gentlemen, like our founding fathers did. They created our Constitution with its checks and balances and its separation of powers because they understood that human beings are not gods. They understood that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. They understood, as Franklin put it, that the only way to get people out of poverty is to make poverty uncomfortable. They understood that no one is guaranteed happiness, but that everyone should be guaranteed the opportunity to seek it. our schools have to return to an opportunity and stop being babysitters, moral counselors, spiritual guidance, and feel-good tummy ticklers for our kids. We don't raise dogs and cats, ladies and gentlemen, as badly as we are raising our children. When your puppy pees on the living room floor, okay, you smack it on the behind, and eventually it figures out it's not supposed to do that. And believe me, children are just about as incapable of understanding deep psychological reasons why you're not supposed to kick your neighbor in the swimming pool as that puppy is about understanding a long discussion about why peeing on the front living room floor isn't nice. You cannot treat children as if they were reasoning, experienced, mature, thinking adults. They are not. There are exceptions among children who are remarkably mature at 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. But they are just that. They are exceptions. And most of them are that way because they have had to take on adult responsibilities way younger than we would normally expect them to. Through circumstances beyond their control. And they have risen to the occasion. And they have put forth the effort and met those responsibilities. And they have learned from that effort. But we do not want to create that adult maturity in a 12-year-old in that way. We do not want to have them lose one parent and have another parent who is physically incapable of caring for them and their brothers and sisters. So they have to shoulder the burden themselves. What we want to be able to do is to teach them at home and in school gradually and age appropriately how to accept their personal responsibility for what they do and do not do. By consequences for inappropriate behaviors, attitudes, and acts. We cannot excuse inappropriate behavior with the "he can't help it, he's autistic, he can't help it, he's dyslexic, she can't help it, she's ADD, they can't help it because they're emotionally disturbed." We cannot continue to allow a false compassion to blind us to the fact that we all learn through experience. We are not born with a conscience. We are not born capable of understanding the effects of our actions. We learn these things through wise teaching from the adults who are responsible for seeing us through childhood and hopefully into a successful and happy adult life. The function of a parent and the function of a teacher are very similar, ladies and gentlemen. Parents are the first best teachers of their children. And one of their greatest responsibilities is to teach their child about their child's responsibilities. From something as simple as, remember to put your dirty clothes in the clothes hamper. Make your bed in the morning. Do your homework when you come home from school. Do your household chores, whatever you're assigned. Feed the kitty. Water the dog. Walk the hamster. Whatever it is. When our children have pets, they need to be taught responsibility for the care of the pet along with the parent because that creature is totally dependent upon its humans for its livelihood, its sustenance, its safety, and its health. You don't buy a child a puppy and then have the child no responsibility for that dog. If you can do that, if you can teach a puppy, you can teach a child. And you don't beat the puppy to death the first time he pees on the living room floor. And you don't lock him up in a closet for 6 months. You train him to understand that this is not appropriate. By consequences that he understands. With a three-year-old, a philosophical discussion on the hurtful nature of sticking your tongue out at your brother is not going to curb the behavior. Taking them off in a corner and giving them a piece of candy for time out after they bite their older sibling is not going to teach them that biting their older sibling is wrong. I taught my grandson not to bite by biting him. Oh, yes, I did. It was a salutary lesson. Now, obviously, I did not draw blood. I didn't break the skin. I did it just hard enough so that he understood what the person he bit was feeling. And he's not an evil child. He figured it out really quickly. It only took once. Children, very young children, do not develop an understanding of the effects of their behavior on others all by themselves. A child doesn't know that the stove is hot. I don't advocate sticking his hand on it to burn him to prove it is. But I do advocate coming close enough so that he can feel the heat from it without touching or harming himself. That's our job as parents and teachers, ladies and gentlemen. Teachers must do it in the socialization area. We're not there to make them happy little citizens obedient to the government. That's not the kind of socialization I mean. We're there to do the kind of socialization that says, no, it's not appropriate simply because you're mad because your mommy didn't give you pancakes this morning to stomp into class and throw your books at the teacher. And no, it's not appropriate for you to get up and run around the classroom because you feel like exercise in the middle of the math lesson. That's the kind of socialization that has to be done in school. Not the, oh, you can't help it. We understand that it's hard for you to do this. So you just go out in the hall for a while and have a calm down period and then come back to class. No. That's not a negative consequence, ladies and gentlemen. The kid wants to get the heck out of class. And 9 times out of 10, you're going to see an increase in the number of running around the classroom and disruptive behavior because the kid is not stupid enough to ignore the fact that, oh boy, I get to leave when I do this. There is a misconception among progressive educators, ladies and gentlemen, that the John Lennon song, All You Need Is Love, should be the mantra when dealing with children with behavioral problems. That only works in very rare cases if the child's behavior stems from abuse in his or her home situation and the child is modeling the behaviors he sees at home. And it only works if that is discovered and the child is removed from the abusive home situation and placed somewhere where more appropriate behaviors are modeled and love is used in discipline rather than violence. Children from homes with parents who care about and love them generally do not behave in that way. And many children who come from homes where they are abused don't turn out to be abusers themselves. Some do. But it's pretty likely that they will be abusers if someone doesn't model and teach them that that kind of behavior is wrong. Not excusable. Not understandable, and not rewarded. those of us who care about the future of this nation, as it was intended by our founders, and not in the insane mind of a progressive politician, must stand up and speak out. We must get involved, because no matter how many times we go to the polls during elections, no matter how much money we contribute to candidates that we believe will change things, it still devolves on us. Because we have to be willing to stand up and speak out and be politically incorrect and tell the truth, even though it might, oh my God, offend someone. I may very well wind up getting fired one day because I've told the truth. Because I have not pandered to a student. Because I have not permitted inappropriate or disruptive or damaging behaviors in my classroom. I may wind up getting sued for abusing a child because I required them to remain in their seat during class and their IEP says they can get up and walk around whenever they want to. And that's not outside the bounds of possibility. So far, it hasn't happened. I have strict rules of behavior in my ISS classroom. Students must remain in their seats, their assigned seats. If I ask them to change seats, they are expected to do so quickly and courteously. They must raise their hand and wait to be called upon before they speak. And 99 100% of them abide by the rules. Yeah, they do. Even the ones who are absolute terrors in regular classrooms. Because I have one tool that the teacher doesn't. I can send them out, and they immediately get sent home. They don't wind up with me until they've been disruptive or broken the rules or damaged something. Because the teachers are not allowed to send them home. They can send them to the office. And then the principal or the vice principal calls the parent. And if the parent argues enough that their poor, disturbed little child can't be treated this way, the kid's put right back in the classroom. And my friend Linda is right. She says, we the people need to speak out and demand better for the kids in schools, for teaching them what they really need to know for life experiences. And she's quite correct. We do. This nation, ladies and gentlemen, was founded on the principle that stated in the Declaration of Independence, that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. And as long as we keep consenting by our silence, they will continue to do to our children what they are doing now. Because they take our silence for consent. When we re-elect over and over and over again men and women who believe that they are beyond the Constitution, that there are no limits to what they can demand that we do or not do, then we consent to let them take away everything that makes life in this nation wonderful and joyous and free. Because silence is consent. All it takes for evil to triumph is for good men and women to do nothing. And although most people focus on Washington and state houses and the laws and regulations and the personal attacks and the vilification of those with conservative principles as racist, warmongering, militia mass killers who can't wait to get their machine gun and go blow away people who disagree with them. We cannot allow ourselves to be silenced, ladies and gentlemen. We have to focus on the future. And the future isn't just those idiots currently holding office. It's our kids. Because unless we stand up and speak out now, they are going to be trained to elect more and more of these insane people to run this country. They're already being trained to do so now. Because they are being trained to expect the easy button. And that nothing is ever their fault. And everything is always somebody else's responsibility. They are being taught this every single day in the 7.5 to 8 hours that they're in school. And if we don't stand up and speak out and do something about it, we will outlive our country. Yeah, we will. That really does concern me, ladies and gentlemen. When I was younger, I never believed that such a thought would enter my mind. But after 40 years in the education business, that thought is more and more often at the forefront of my consciousness. And I don't want to outlive my country. I don't want to let progressive insanity turn this nation into another Somalia, or Bosnia, or Libya, or Syria, or China, or Vietnam. No, I don't want that. Progressives will tell us that if you feel love for this nation, if that you feel patriotism, if you mean what you say when you say the Pledge of Allegiance, if you feel a rush of emotion when you hear the Star Spangled Banner, you are a reactionary, stupid idiot who just doesn't see the global utopia that's in store for you and everybody else. You're dragging your feet and slowing down the engine of progress that's going to make life perfect for everyone on earth, because everyone on earth will have equal outcomes all the time. Well, I am not stupid, ladies and gentlemen. And I know that all of that is nothing but a flat-out lie. It isn't wrong or reactionary or cruel or mean to love the nation in which you live for its principles, which is what conservatives do. We aren't jingoistic. We aren't America first. America is better simply because we happen to be standing in it. Conservatives love this nation because of what it has stood for since its founding. Not that it has always been successful at living the ideals expressed in our founding documents, but because it has always tried to live those ideals. It has always tried to repair its mistakes. It has always tried to learn from history and not try to reinvent the wheel when we already have one. Or build a better mousetrap that doesn't trap anything and allows the mice to breed indiscriminately. Or give up the world to the mice because we don't want to hurt their feelings. Loving this nation and caring about its future is not being old-fashioned or blind to its faults. Those of us who believe in the basic founding principles are not blind to the fact that we didn't always abide by them. We spent 100 years perpetuating one of the most inhumane institutions in the history of the world, the slavery of Africans, and the denigration of their abilities and their chance to become full citizens. But we fought a war over that issue, a real war with troops and cannons and guns and horses and cavalry and men dying. And then we fought another war 100 years later to bring us completely out of that age into a situation where every human being should be judged by the content of his character and not the color of his skin. And we listened to Dr. King, and we did what was needed to create that state. No, we are not a perfect country, ladies and gentlemen. There is no such thing, and there never will be. We are not perfect people. There is no such thing, and there never will be. But what we are, those of us who believe in this nation and the conservative ideals and the principles upon which we were founded, we are patriots. We believe that the principles of this nation are good and just and right, and we are willing to stand up and say so at the risk of our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And we may not be on a battlefield facing somebody else's musket pointing at our head, but we do have things to lose. Jobs, standing in the community, the friendship of those we work with, the esteem of our peers, the chance for being successful in our chosen profession. Those are at risk in this current climate of progressivism for those who believe in individual effort, self-reliance, free markets, and reality. But I believe strongly that there are more of us, ladies and gentlemen, than the media and the politicians would have you know. This is still the United States of America, and we are still Americans. No matter what our ethnic background, no matter where our ancestors came from, no matter where we may have been born, every single person in this nation is here because this place offered them an opportunity they couldn't find at home, or their ancestors couldn't find at home. That's how we became a nation. Not because everybody was guaranteed equal outcomes, but because everybody was guaranteed a chance. Not only to succeed, but a chance to fail and learn from our mistakes. If we prohibit our children from failing, we stop them from learning from their mistakes. We perpetuate behaviors, attitudes, and thinking patterns that will keep them failing, even though they may not realize it, because they will be artificially held up by a system that sooner or later must collapse, because it will destroy initiative, independent thinking, and the willingness to accept that living is risk. Colonel Sanders of Kentucky Fried Chicken fame went bankrupt 3 or 4 times before he became a success, but died an incredibly wealthy man. When Edison was asked if he didn't get frustrated at how many failures he'd had in inventing the incandescent light bulb, his response was, "Well, I figured out 86 different ways not to make an incandescent light bulb." I believe, ladies and gentlemen, that even those people who think that the government should take care of them are capable of being awakened. And I believe that there are way less of them than the media and our politicians would have you think. If you look at the map of this country and you look at the states that did not go toward our current president in the last election, you will notice something that's very clear. The only states that overwhelmingly voted for the current president are states with very large urban populations. Jefferson was right, boys and girls. If we pile ourselves on cities, in cities as they do in Europe, we will not be able to sustain our republic. Because in the city, every moment of your day tells you that it's somebody else's job. We can't let the cities run the country, ladies and gentlemen. I don't want to live in the Hunger Games either. Thank you so much, folks, for joining us tonight. All my friends in the chat room, Oz and Michael and Linda and Rod, and the guest who dropped in, and my friend Yo, who was here for a bit. All of these folks are members of our Patriot Families website and group. We aren't crazy militia members gathering together to plan on shooting somebody. Trust me, okay? There may be somebody in the group who is, but they haven't told me about it. We are garden variety American citizens who believe in the founding principles of this nation and that those principles have been and should remain a beacon of light to the world. We believe that we truly are the nation, and it is our responsibility as well as our joy to stand up and speak truth where we find it. We're fighters, and we're stubborn, and we know we can't have it immediately, and we know we can't always have everything we want, but we don't quit. And I know those of you out there listening don't quit either. And I know that many of you are as involved as I am in speaking out about the problems we face in this nation, in many areas, and not just education. I do this because that is my profession and that is my love. I was born to teach. I tried not to for many years in a lot of different ways, but inevitably I keep winding up having to do it anyway. So who am I to kick against my destiny? And I will continue to do so as long as I can, as long as I have a voice to raise in support of truth and offer what I've learned to the children who are my responsibility. I hope you'll join us, ladies and gentlemen, next Thursday at 6 for another episode of Patriot Education. As always, please call in with your comments and ideas or send us an email at Patriot Families or join us in the chat room. If you have suggestions about topics or incidents you know about or something you've read or heard or seen that you want to share with us about what's going on in our public schools and what you think we can do to try to repair the mistakes that are being made. You too have a voice, ladies and gentlemen, and you're more than welcome to use it here on Blog Talk Radio every Thursday, Patriot Education. Join us, too, every night of the week for a radio show from Patriot Families. Frank is fed up on Sundays, Constitution Hour on Monday, Patriot Family Chat on Tuesday, Right from the Left Coast on Wednesday, Patriot Education every Thursday, Foreclosure Help on Friday, and Breaking the Illusion on Saturday. We've got something for everybody, ladies and gentlemen, and we hope that you will be here. Make sure we do not outlive our beloved nation. Good night, everyone, and thank you again for joining us. We'll see you again next week at 6, next Thursday for Patriot Education. God bless everyone, and have a wonderful night.